From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today on Target, we will be talking about new programs in the Eisenhower Institute and the faculty meeting of last week.
Then we'll talk to Gettysburg College President Janet Morgan Riggs. Stay with us.
So, Ben, recently you wrote an article about the Eisenhower Institute and the new projects they'll be implementing in the fall of 2018. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so lots of things are new on the horizon over at EI, and they are running, I believe, six programs beginning this fall as part of their application, application-based programs. And three of them are totally new, and three of them are recurring in some fashion or another. So the recurring ones, Inside Civil Rights, which began last year, that's a kind of a collaborative program between EI and the Garthwaite Leadership Center, as well as the Office of Multicultural Engagement. And I don't know, I feel like maybe the Center for Public Service is involved. Any alphabet soup campus agency seems to be generally involved in that project. And so that one takes a trip to Little Rock, Arkansas, and investigates civil rights, as the name would indicate. Also, environmental leadership is back on the horizon. Howard Ernst, who's on the faculty at the Naval Academy, runs that program. He previously was an adjunct in the public policy program here, no longer, but now that the public policy program has its own tenure track professor, his services, I suppose, were no longer required in that regard. And then the other returning program is Susan Eisenhower's program called Strategy and Leadership in Transformational Times, or abbreviated SALT. That program tends to take a trip to Normandy. I'm not sure if that's on the horizon. I don't think they're sure if that's on the horizon yet. This year, with the 75th anniversary of D-Day is next spring. EI is actually going to be doing some programming around that. And then some new programs on the horizon include one called Eisenhower's Decisions, which will be for first years and sophomores, led by the provost of the college, Chris Zappi, who has a PhD in decision sciences. That was the focus of his PhD, which I imagine is in management or something. He's a professor and affiliate professor in the Organization and Management Studies program at Gettysburg, and he was previously a business professor at Bucknell. So in any case, he'll lead that program called Eisenhower's Decisions. That's kind of a six-week program this fall, smaller commitment perhaps than some of the other programs. Decision 2018 is sort of going to replace Inside Politics. Casey Pipes, who previously led Inside Politics, is who was a speechwriter in the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, is currently writing a book, and so is away from the college this fall. And so he is on hiatus. And so this program will engage some Gettysburg alums who work on the Hill. Jamie Fleet is a senior staffer to Nancy Pelosi on the Democratic side, and Ryan Woodward is on Peter King, who's a Republican from New York, on his staff. They're going to work in conjunction with Bruce Larson, a legislative politics professor at Gettysburg, who's actually on sabbatical right now, but is going to be coming back to facilitate that program. It's going to be a deep dive into some House races in the midterms. And then finally, Contours of the Middle East and North Africa will replace Inside the Middle East. This program is arguably the most, I don't want to say controversial, but I think there's a good deal of interest around what happened here. Avi Malamed, who previously led Inside the Middle East, a program in which, for full disclosure, I participated last year and had an excellent experience in. I wrote about that on the college website a while back. But in any case, that program is no longer. Depending who you talk to, and we talked to both sides on this particular issue, Avi said that it was not his decision. The college said, well, he wasn't available, so we went another direction. It's unclear what exactly happened in there. I think certainly fundraising was a primary deciding factor in all of this. The Inside the Middle East program included a 10-day trip to Israel, and obviously that was you know, expensive. And so raising the money for that was something that Avi did along with Jeffrey Blavatt, the former executive director of EI. And so, you know, all of that said, and Avi having some other projects, that program is no longer. Danny Seabright, who is a distinguished Middle East scholar in his own right, he has done a lot of work in the Defense Intelligence Agency, worked at the Pentagon. He's on the EI National Advisory Council. He will be leading this new Contours of the Middle East in North Africa program, which purportedly they're abbreviating CMENA. I think that name needs some work, but that's just me. And in any case, he'll work with some Middle East Islamic Studies faculty, I believe, including Aisha Mershani, Yasmin Akbaba from Political Science, Amy Everard in Anthropology, and someone else whose name escapes me. Megan Sijapati in the Religious Studies Department are all going to be contributing to that. I think it's going to take a bit of a broader look at the Middle East. Avi's program was focused on intelligence analysis. This is going to take a bit more of a, I don't want to say an academic track, but the conversations I've had lead me to believe that it'll be less explicitly intelligence and security focused in the way that Inside the Middle East was, and it will not include a trip to the Middle East at the conclusion, which certainly will bring the cost down.
I do think that perhaps in exploring the Middle East and more broadly within North Africa, it may provide a better context to the region rather than just focusing on just what we consider to be the Middle East.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that, although I will say, having participated in the Inside the Middle East program, you know, people had the freedom, participants in that program had the freedom to write their intelligence reports on any topic they wanted, and some wrote about water issues in Egypt. And so, you know, it's not as if North Africa was excluded from the Inside the Middle East program, although I think certainly in the sort of geopolitical context, a lot of Iran came through more so than necessarily all of the North African countries. And, you know, it's debatable as to whether Iran is even in the Middle East. Some would argue that that's Persia and that that's, you know, heading towards other parts of the world. I mean, the Middle East is kind of a nebulous term. Interestingly enough, Rob Boyer, the associate provost and dean of public policy programs, who these days is kind of overseeing the Eisenhower Institute, is very interested in refocusing to some extent. I don't think it's unfair to say that it's refocusing EI on programs relating to Eisenhower and his, you know, issues that were prevalent during his presidency. And so when you think about the presidency of Dwight Eisenhower, I'm not sure that you really think about the Middle East a whole lot. I mean, certainly he did a little bit in Iran that may or may not have eventually sparked a bit of an uprising that had some problems for America 20 years later. But that's neither here nor there. And, you know, so several of these other programs, you know, the environment wasn't exactly a pressing concern in the 1950s either. So it'll be interesting to see where EI goes from here. I think that the next frontier for them is probably hiring a new executive director. No process to date has been outlined on that front. And Rob Boyer himself, in my conversations with him, didn't at least not let on that he has an idea of what the timeline is for that. It doesn't seem like something that the college is pushing terribly aggressively right now. And some of that may have to do with the fact that we don't know what the next president's going to have as his or her priorities. And so, you know, one of the components of the college's current strategic plan is building on the public policy program. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes in light of a new presidency.
Absolutely. And on that note, the presidential forum will continue on September 6th, this Thursday, in Mara Auditorium for all students and just the community in general to come and discuss further what they want in their next president.
Yeah, that's right. And Charlie Scott, who's chairing the presidential search and will be leading that forum, is actually going to be our guest next week on Target. So we'll be able to talk to him about where the search is going. It's probably a nice segue into the next topic you wanted to discuss, which was the faculty meeting this week. And at that faculty meeting, Dave Brennan, who's the new chair of the Board of Trustees, said that he spoke with Russell Reynolds, which is the search firm, with folks from Russell Reynolds, which is the search firm the college has retained to assist in this search. And they said that they have never received more feedback for a presidential search than they have at Gettysburg College. Does that surprise you that Gettysburg is weighing in?
It does not, actually. I think one of the most positive things about this college is how opinionated our students really are.
Well, I don't think it's just students.
definitely not. But I think our community is definitely very interested in who will be leading our institution into the future, and Russell Reynolds should expect far more feedback in the future. Now, Ben, at the faculty meeting, you also wrote about that there may be a business major on the horizon. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's something interesting, and we'll talk to President Riggs about this in a little bit. But President Riggs essentially said that the management department, which currently has the Organization and Management Studies, or OMS, as the campus lingo tends to go, OMS major, is looking at adding or putting together a proposal to the faculty, and this would have several layers of approval. So I want to emphasize that nothing is a done deal, even that a proposal is coming to the faculty. But a business major in sort of the model of the international affairs program, the public policy program, where it would have to be a second major, as in you couldn't just be a business major, but you could be a business and environmental studies major, or a business and, you know, whatever. French. I don't know why French just came to mind. Anyway. The college in the past has resisted the notion of pre-professional degree programs. There's no pre-law major at Gettysburg. There's no pre-health major at Gettysburg. There's no pre-med major, you know, and so the college, to some extent, has resisted the idea of these sort of vocationally inclined majors. There's no journalism major at Gettysburg. And so, you know, I wonder whether this is kind of a tacit acknowledgement that market forces, I mean, certainly, and I imagine President Riggs may have something to say on this subject, but when students are looking for colleges, if they're searching for colleges that have a business major, which, you know, as parents are often the ones guiding these students' college searches, and maybe you can attest to this.
Absolutely.
That, you know, they want their kids to be going somewhere where they'll have good earning potential coming out of college. And I think there's a belief that a business major, a degree in business is more economically useful in the long term than a degree in philosophy, and I'm sure that the philosophy department on campus might have something to say about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that to some extent, if the conversation can stay open after, you know, you search for colleges that have a business major, if Gettysburg is still on that list, then, you know, you can continue the conversation about the liberal arts and, you know, the unique advantages that people who come to Gettysburg believe the liberal arts has. And so I imagine that's where this is coming from. To be honest with you, I'd say it's 50-50 at best that the college faculty is going to sign off on a business major. And frankly, if the student body is going to stay the same size as it is now, and it's worth noting there's a committee looking into that as to whether we're at the optimum size, if that's going to stay at the same size now as it is now, you know, a business major could potentially pull students from other departments. And I imagine that other departments might have something to say about that. Now, it's also worth noting, like I said a minute ago, that this could only be added as a second major. So theoretically, it wouldn't be siphoning off students from other disciplines. But, you know, I imagine that'll be a concern.
Absolutely. And I think that discourse about what's the most marketable trait for a student coming out of a liberal arts education is something that we talk about a lot at Gettysburg College. For example, like you mentioned earlier, we say environmental studies. We don't say environmental science on this campus. We have students that while you may be studying science, you're also studying, you know, the politics behind environment and the policies that are put in place about it. I think that OMS was the liberal arts model of studying business, but I think we're starting to realize that perhaps it's not the most marketable thing when students are looking for a school that they want to study business at. And we are losing students based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the environmental studies program does offer a Bachelor of Arts degree and a Bachelor of Science degree. And the Bachelor of Science degree does have more of the heavy, you know,
absolutely
science parts of environmental studies. But yeah, you're absolutely right on that front. And it reminds me that, you know, you co-hosted this podcast last week and we never really did a formal introduction. So why don't you tell us, Gari, a little bit about yourself now that you're the new co-host of On Target?
Well, yeah, my name's Gari Mangala. I'm a sophomore. I'm technically undeclared, but I do plan on double majoring in international affairs, which is one of our dual major programs at Gettysburg, and anthropology, much to Ben's supposed dismay.
What are you talking about? I have no animosity towards any degree program on campus.
Of course not.
That is the official position of me.
Yeah. And double minoring in Middle Eastern and Islamic studies and theater arts, again, much to Ben's dismay.
Well, yes, I will admit to dismay that you let the theater department detract from your time to contribute to the Gettysburg. I will certainly admit that.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm the news editor of the Gettysburg, along with being heavily involved in the theater department. And I'm happy to be here, Ben.
All right. Well, where are you from, Gari?
Yeah, I'm from Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania is a good state.
Pennsylvania is a great state. Love Pennsylvania. Love the Keystone State. I was born in Princeton, New Jersey. Woot woot. But I've lived in Pennsylvania long enough.
My official position is that New Jersey is a buffer that protects Pennsylvania from the ocean.
I don't disagree with that, but I think many students on our campus would.
They're wrong.
Well, I will maintain that there are parts of New Jersey that are very, very nice.
All right, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one. But that's the type of civil discourse I know everyone's come to expect from On Target, now in season two. So what other news and notes do you have, Gari? I believe Senate is having its first meeting this week.
Yeah, Senate will be starting up tomorrow, Monday, September 3rd, 7. Are they moving to the Cub? No.
They are staying in Cub 260. This is their old meeting location for now. There is a meeting room off of the new OSAGL, Office of Student Activities and Greek Life Suite, in the Cub, but it is not big enough to accommodate the full range of folks that attend student Senate meetings. So for now, my understanding, based on conversations I've had with the president of the Senate, Nick Arbaugh, that they're going to be staying in Cub 260 at least until, you know, they decide not to.
I'm sure it's going to be a lively first meeting of the semester.
And speaking of live,
we will be Facebook Live. Facebooking live? How does the verb go?
Live
for that?
Streaming, live perhaps streaming on Facebook? Perhaps.
Every single Senate meeting, as well as posting our normal articles here on the Gettysburg and probably talking about them on Target.
Yeah, so be sure to check out facebook.com/thegettysburg if you're interested in following along with the Gettysburg College Student Senate, which I think after last spring in particular, many students are. It'll be interesting to see what they decide to take up as their causes this year. If anyone is familiar with Nick Arbaugh, they will know that he is not someone to sit on his hands or to avoid raking. I don't want to say muckraking, but muckraking. I imagine the activism that manifested itself within Student Senate last year will likely continue into the 2018-19 academic year. I think that wraps up our news segment. We'll be right back with the Bullet Report. Well, for those loyal On Target listeners who may have missed it last week when there was no Gettysburg College sports action on which to report, it's been an exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. The volleyball team defeated Gallaudet University 3-0 on August the 31st. The women's soccer team lost to Lynchburg 1-0. The field hockey team lost to Shenandoah 2-1. The men's soccer team beat Whitworth 2-1. The volleyball team defeated Messiah 3-0. The men's cross-country team finished 4th out of 9 at the Shippensburg Invitational, while the women's cross-country team finished 6th of 6. The volleyball team defeated Penn State Harrisburg 3-0 on Saturday. The football team lost its season opener to Bridgewater 34-17. The women's soccer team tied Roanoke 1-1. The volleyball team defeated Meredith 3-0, and the men's soccer team lost to the State University of New York at Cortland 4-1. Thus endeth the Bullet Report. And we're joined today on Target by the president of Gettysburg College, Dr. Janet Morgan Riggs. President Riggs, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Ben.
So we're now wrapping up week one of classes here at Gettysburg. On Monday, I was scrolling through Facebook, as one does, and saw some pictures of Gettysburg College seniors posting that it was their last first day of classes. And it occurred to me that in some ways, you're kind of in that boat. So I just thought we could start, and this whole interview is not going to be a retrospective, but I was hoping we could start with you maybe sharing a little bit about how you're approaching the final year of your presidency at the college and what your state of mind is, knowing that next year at this time, for example, you won't be catching connection flights or missing connection flights back from Montana, as you shared at the faculty meeting yesterday.
Yes. maybe missing connection flights from somewhere else, however, who knows? Yeah. Yeah, it is a little surreal, I suppose. And yeah, I share something in common with the seniors going through those lasts. But quite honestly, I'm very focused this year on doing what needs to be done. And so that really hasn't quite caught up with me mm-hmm. yet. I'm looking forward to a great year. I have been pledging to people that I will be very engaged all year long. I'm sure the campus perspective will start to shift when a new president is named. That's probably when I'll really feel like, okay, we're winding things up here. But certainly until then, I continue to stay 100% focused. And we have set a series of goals for the year, as we always do. And I don't know if you'd like me to talk a little bit about those. Happy to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, certainly, I mean, as we're talking about transition, the presidential transition is probably on the minds of just about everyone. And I am committed to supporting that transition so that things really do go very smoothly for Gettysburg. We don't want to lose any momentum in a transition. I am not directly involved in the search. It's funny how often people will ask me about details related to the search, and I am not on the search committee, but I have served as a resource to the chair of the search committee on occasion. And certainly once the new president is named, I'll try to affect as smooth of a transition as we can make. So I'm looking forward to being supportive and helpful in that process. In terms of the college as a whole, we have some goals. We do have a strategic plan. We're continuing to move forward. So we continue to stay focused on our themes of impact, inclusion and internationalization, and innovation. We will be publishing an update on that plan a little bit later in the fall, towards the end of September, I suspect. And then we will continue to march through that. And then in terms of the financial aspects, you know, I'm very focused there. We'll continue fundraising. We've completed a successful campaign, but we never let up with fundraising for Gettysburg College. And our development staff thinks that during my last year, they can kind of leverage that opportunity for some last gifts from people that I've established relationships with. And in addition, well, you heard at the faculty meeting a little bit yesterday, Ben, it's a challenging time for higher education from a financial perspective. And so we are continuing to work with our board and with members of the faculty to assure that we will continue to have a very successful financial future. So those are the primary areas of focus for the year. Mm-hmm. With the exception of the presidential transition, they would be the primary areas of focus for the year, whether this was my last year or not.
Right. And last year at this time, speaking of goals, we had you on this podcast and you outlined your vision for how the college would undertake a discussion on freedom of expression. And over the course of the remainder of the academic year, the process that you outlined on this podcast kind of happened almost exactly as you said it would. And last May, the Board of Trustees joined the Faculty and Student Senate in ratifying the statement of institutional philosophy that was developed by that work work group that Associate Provost Jennifer Bloomquist led. So I guess two questions. First, what was your kind of biggest takeaway or biggest takeaways from that process? And where do we go from here?
Well, first, I want to say how grateful I am to Jennifer and the members of the committee, but also to the entire college community for participating so fully in that process. For me, that was a takeaway, just seeing the engagement. I can't remember another time when we've had so many groups focusing on the same area and having such open discussion. And I think that was really healthy, and it might be a model for some other things down the road that we want to take on as a community. So I was pleased with the process. I actually think one of the most important outcomes is just the education that goes along with the discussion of this topic. I think we all learned a lot. We learned a lot from hearing from each other, and the statement kind of morphed as we learned more. And I think what we came up with was one that people generally felt very comfortable with. It's not perfect, but I think it reflects well where we need to be as an institution on this topic of freedom of expression. So I'm proud of the community mm-hmm. for their participation and for the outcome. In terms of next steps are to start reviewing our policies to be sure they are consistent with this philosophy statement. And I think in some cases we'll find that they are, and in some cases we'll need to make some revisions. I believe this is one of the primary agenda items for the Student Life Committee this year. We're also doing a review of employee handbooks, faculty handbooks, as a matter of course, and we will want to be sure that this policy is fully integrated into those as well. Mm-hmm. So I think the next step is revision of policy. And then, of course, you know, the devil is always in the details in terms of implementation, and there will still be some gray areas. There are no question about that. But I think this will give us sort of a better compass for making decisions.
Right. And on that policy review note, just one digging into that a little bit, is that going to primarily happen at the Student Life Committee, or are there other groups that are involved in that?
I think primarily Student Life Committee. But as I said, as we look at employee handbooks mm-hmm. and things, there will be others involved. I would guess Faculty Council usually is involved with changes to our faculty handbook, human resources. So I'm sure mm-hmm. there will be others looking at these as well. Yeah.
And as you said, you're hoping that more groups are going to be as active as they were in the creation of the freedom of expression policy. Hopefully that will come through in the presidential search and through the forums. At the last forum, many students discussed the state of diversity and inclusion on the campus. As the sort of, you know, overlooker of the college, where do you think we are? Where do you think we are going?
Well, there's always work to be done. And so I'll be the first person to say that. I think there is still a lot of work to be done on this campus in terms of not just diversifying the community, but really focusing on the environment here and how we can make this a more welcoming community for everyone. That said, I think we've made really good progress over the last few years. This has certainly been an important thing to me personally and as president. I do think the arrival of Jean Arnold as a chief diversity officer, who has had big impact. I think she's exerted her impact in some very quiet ways that people don't even know. She does not have a division of people that she works with. She works collaboratively with people on campus, sort of behind the scenes. She sits with President's Council, and so this topic is in front of us for every discussion. And so I think her impact has been tremendous. I do think we're starting to think about these issues in different ways, too. You know, I think people are so quick to say, well, diversity is race and ethnicity. And of course, that's one aspect of diversity, but you think of other things as well, socioeconomic diversity, religious diversity, gender expression, sexual orientation, and so on. There are so many pieces of this. I had a group of students from Phoenix Rising come speak to me last year about neurodiversity. And I think we're learning a lot about that and the fact that there may be some things we need to be doing in that area that we're not currently doing. So I think one of the great things about this is we're thinking about these topics more broadly. I was just in a conversation the other day with some folks about our ADA committee. And, you know, traditionally they have been focused on physical accessibility to buildings, which is important, obviously. But they are starting to see a much larger agenda as well. So I feel like, you know, we're it's on our minds, and that matters. And I feel like we're taking some really good steps. I feel like our Office of Multicultural Engagement has been doing a phenomenal job in terms of programming, and now to have that facility, I think symbolically is meaningful, but I also think practically speaking, it's making a difference. Our new Office of Religious and Spiritual Life, I think, is a wonderful addition. Every division of the college has an inclusion action plan that they've just completed year two of, and they're moving through the third year of. We just have to stay on it. That's my point. We just have to stay on it, and I'm pleased that we are. Yeah.
One thing you mentioned at yesterday's faculty meeting, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, was that you're thinking about the longevity of liberal arts colleges, Gettysburg, obviously, in particular, and some of, you know, the adaptations that we may need to make in order to continue to grow and succeed. And to that end, I know you mentioned yesterday that the Board of Trustees has launched a long-term financial planning group. And you also mentioned that the management department is working on plans to roll out a business major. Then that still has a long way to go, obviously, in terms of the faculty would weigh in on that issue as a whole. But I know that's something that students have desired for a long time. So as you consider Gettysburg's long-term future, what do you think are some of our current strengths with respect to that, and also weaknesses, and what types of changes do you think Gettysburg may have to make to continue to move in a positive direction in the long term? Just a simple question.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you asked me a simple question. You know, and you actually included a lot of questions in that. So what are our strengths? You want to start with that one?
Sure.
What are our strengths? Okay. I think I always say this, and I believe it 100%. Our strengths here are our people and our focus on mission and our dedication to that. You do not find a group of people like we have at Gettysburg College on a lot of other campuses who are so laser focused on why we do what we do and are dedicated to excellence. That makes a huge difference and allows us, I think, to do a lot more with less. And I never take that for granted. And so we want to be sure we continue to attract people who care a lot about our students, who are dedicated to their development, personal and intellectual, and are, you know, willing to work hard at it. So that's number one. I do think that's a strength. I have said many times, and I believe it firmly, that a liberal arts education is the most contemporary form of education we have in the country and in the world. And the reason I say that is because things are moving so quickly. Students will graduate into a world that's changing just dramatically. It used to be, you know, 25, 50 years ago, somebody graduated and they went into a career and they stayed in that career, you know, for their whole professional lives. That's not the way it works anymore. And so we have to be providing students with skill sets that allow them to be flexible and to learn and to think and to be able to communicate. Those basic skills are even more important now than I think they once were. And so I think it's incumbent on us to continue that focus. But we also have to explain why that's important. And a lot of people don't quite kind of get that. They think, well, you know, a graduate today just needs a specific set of technical skills so they can get that first job. But we always say, yes, our students are getting great first jobs, but it's not really about the first job. We're trying to help our students think beyond the first job and prepare for beyond that first job. And so we really, I think, need to continue to help the public understand what the value is of the kind of education that we provide. We're in a very elite and select group. There are very few of us who do this sort of thing. When you look at the percentage of college graduates, I mean, the percent graduating from colleges like Gettysburg is minuscule. So I think it's something very important that we need to protect. The basic concern is cost. Let's just face it, you know. What are we at? $67,000 or so tuition, room, and board this year. It's astronomical. Not many people can afford that. And so the biggest concern is how we continue to make this education accessible and affordable to the students who'd like to benefit from it. And that's the number one concern. And, you know, it's about fundraising. It's about using the resources we have wisely. It's about being sure that we have programs that are going to attract students here. And it's about excellence and quality. So people think, you know, this is worth it. It's worth doing. These are questions that all liberal arts colleges are facing, by the way, not just Gettysburg College. We're all struggling with these issues. They don't have ready solutions. Everybody's looking for the silver bullet. You know, what's the answer? Well, there isn't an answer, really. But I think there's an evolution that we have to undergo, and we've been in it. I mean, when we're talking about diversity and inclusion, understanding that the demographics of this country and the world are changing, and we need to be attractive to students from a wide variety of backgrounds. And we need preparing students to go off in professional and personal lives and interact comfortably with people from a wide variety of backgrounds. So that's one piece of that evolution. The business major is an example. I don't know if the faculty will approve a business major or not. I think it depends on the quality of the proposal and whether or not we can see it as a strong liberal arts major. I happen to think you can design a business major that is true to our liberal arts mission, and I think our management department is up to that task. But it will be up to the faculty to determine if that's to be offered here at Gettysburg.
Yeah, and I know that one of your predecessors as president, Gordon Holland, has always been at least quoted as, you know, around campus as being against the sort of idea of pre-vocational majors, such as, you know, journalism or veterinary science, or do you think he would have thought a business major fell into that category?
I think we had a business, and we might have had a business major when he was here. The department has morphed a lot over the years, so we might have had one. And by the way, I agree with him on the not too specified, but again, I think if you can put together a major in the area of business that has strong liberal arts core, why not? You know, why not?
Right.
The business minor has certainly been popular with our students. And so I think one of the things that's happening is some very bright students, when they start doing their college search, have an interest in business. And so, you know, obviously, what are you going to do? You're going to do a search for schools that have business majors. We're not on the list. And so we're not even in their group of schools to look at. And that's what we want to avoid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I've heard something like 80% of the students who are currently organization and management studies majors, which is the major offered in the management department, add the business minor. So
right,
it seems like there's an interest there.
Right.
Go ahead.
In terms of the way the campus life and the way just the campus ebbs and flows within the students, one big draw socially is definitely Greek life.
Yeah.
You know, my grade is now going through rush events, so I'm watching my friends go through that. For you, again, I know that you were in Greek life when you were here at Gettysburg, and now watching it progress as president, where do you think we are in terms of the way it has progressed? Yeah. Do you think there is changes to be made? Do you think that it's in a good place? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's another big one. I was in Greek life at a time when, 90% of the student body was Greek, something like that. I will say it was also a time when Gettysburg was much more isolated from the rest of the world. No internet. Smaller town then. Very little else going on campus. It was very different. It was a very different time, different context. I think the good news on Greek life, and this may not be a popular view, but is that it has become more of a choice. That has certainly been a goal of mine, that students can find a healthy social life outside of Greek life. I do not think you should have to be Greek to have a social life at Gettysburg College. And that is the way it used to be. And I hope we're moving away from that. I think our numbers now, I want to say, I think it's just under 50% of our students are Greek, which is still a very large number. But it's certainly significantly less than it was. There is a, I'll just put it out there, there is a bit of a power differential because fraternities have houses and therefore they can host parties. And so they have a little leverage, I guess, over the social life of the campus. And so that too is something I'd like to see shift. I'd like us to be able to provide venues where students have other social outlets. So you don't have to go to a fraternity house to have a party. You can if you want, but you can do it in the Office of Multicultural Engagement, maybe, for instance, or in a, what are we calling them now? Spark houses, theme houses, whatever they are. I think those groupings are actually really important, and I hope they're providing a little bit of balance in the social life, that students can find people they want to live with and socialize with around a particular theme or interest other than Greek. I hope the new College Union building provides a place where students can hang out, either study, socialize, have a good time late at night. So I think, I don't know whether I'm really answering your question well, Gauri, but I think it's all about balance. I think we used to be way too focused on Greek organizations here, and what we're trying to work towards is a better balance. You'll remember, I hope you know, last year, 2 years ago now, our trustees did a study of Greek life, and they came up with some guiding principles that were meant to improve the quality of Greek life as well as the quality of the social life for students more generally. I've been pleased that I think the Greek organizations have tried to step up to implement those principles. I think there's been some good progress made. But I continue to think we need to work hard to be sure there are strong social alternatives, non-alcoholic, alcoholic, whatever, strong social alternatives that are attractive to students.
I definitely know that, like, living in themed housing, a lot of people do like the alternative of, like, having parties at themed housing because of the safety aspect of it. In terms of that, and Greek life specifically with fraternity houses, because they're the ones that do have housing, like you said, on your level, of an administrative level, what can still be done to make sure that students, specifically women, feel safe entering a frat house?
Yeah. I think some of the program we've been doing on campus has really been trying to focus on that, trying to help students understand what some of the perils could be, this whole bystander intervention program. I think is really important to know that it's, you can, if you see a friend who's sort of heading in a direction that you know could not end well, it's not really that hard. You don't have to do all that much sometimes to get in the way of a bad situation and prevent it from happening. I think encouraging all of our students to take responsibility for the quality of the social life and for each other's safety is really where it's at. I mean, we can institute all kinds of rules, but it, you know, what happens out there at, 1 o'clock in the morning is going to be a direct function of how students handle those rules and interact with one another. Yeah.
I think there's a large perception, and I don't know if you maybe can say whether you think this is true or not, but there's a perception that one of the reasons that Greek life remains such a prevalent force on campus is that, you know, as you, and this kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier with fundraising, that a lot of alumni who write large checks to the college were involved in Greek life, and that to some extent, you know, efforts to pull back on the impact of Greek life may be opposed by those who are writing checks to the college. Do you think that's the case, or is that an overblown perception?
I think that is overblown. I mean, obviously, there's some of that. We would have angry alumni if we disbanded the Greek system, and they'd go off and pout and be upset, and maybe there would be some withdrawal of funds. I tend to think people who threaten that way. Well, I'm not so threatened by that. Let me just put it that way. I will tell you, I often receive on a whole variety of issues. Well, I'll never give another dime to the college if you don't do X, Y, or Z. And you just have to do what's right for the college, frankly. So there are some other complications, though. We have studied other institutions that have approached this in a variety of ways to try to get a sense of what some of the pitfalls might be. And so much depends on the environment you're in. So, you know, some of these are really college-specific, location-specific, that sort of thing. But there have been places that have tried to get rid of the Greek system. And what happens is that then the Greek system goes on independently, disassociated from the institution. And then you have some real safety concerns because you have no ability to control what's going on. And there are institutions where that has happened. So the Greeks are basically off on their own. They're still having their parties. There's no college control over them. And that scares the heck out of me, frankly. I do really worry about that. And I think our system is sufficiently strong and the alumni network is sufficiently strong that if we were to disband the system, it's highly likely it would continue anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe over time, you know, maybe over a decade or two decades, it would dwindle away. I will say, too, there are others that really are proponents of the Greek system because of some of its good qualities, you know, the leadership development opportunities, affinity with other people, it's a way to meet people. Some of them have strong philanthropic activities, some of them less so. I think they need to be thought of as other, not the organization on campus, but just as another activity, another club, another, you know, set of contacts you have as opposed to total identity. But again, you know, we could go around and around on this one. Different people have different perspectives. I don't like the sort of almost elitist, selective, you can be in, you can't aspect. That's what really bothers me more than anything else about these organizations, frankly. It creates, I think, a lot of disruption and hurt, which I just have a problem with.
Mm-hmm. And so finally, by May of next year, you will have served as Gettysburg's president for 10 years, for a
11.
Decade. 11.
11
years.
I started in 2008.
Oh, okay. I was reading 2009.
Yeah, well, I was inaugurated in 2009, but I started June 1st, 2008.
Okay, so yeah. 11 years. So you've already served for 10 years. Mm. And so as you reflect on that tenure, which I think in the world of higher education is a fairly long presidency, what do you look upon as some of your biggest successes, and what do you wish you had another 11 years to do? Maybe nothing.
I wasn't expecting that. What if I had another 11 years? Oh, my. I'm thinking. I'm still here, folks. I'm thinking. You know, I don't take credit for most of what we've been able to accomplish here. I try hard not to get in the way of good ideas. And to try to encourage good things to happen. I think a president is a facilitator. You have to do some leading. Clearly, you have to make some hard decisions. But, you know, I think my job has been to facilitate good work by other people. It has been a very challenging time. So I made it a point of 2008 because I began this job. And it had been a little bit of a rocky time here on campus. And then the bottom dropped out of the economy. So I have never been in this job when we have not been worrying about the budget. Not for a minute. So that's been challenging. But it does, I think, make you set priorities and really focus on what's important. And so that's probably the silver lining of that. I've had a great team of people to work with. As I said before, I think it's all about this community. We have such good people here who've been able to facilitate great progress. I am proud of the diversity and inclusion efforts. Again, we have a lot of ways to go, but I am proud of that. I'm really pleased about all the work that's been done, funding that we've raised to support student engagement outside of the classroom. So the research opportunities that we now have available for students are far greater than what we had 10 years ago. The career development piece of the program is light years beyond what we had. And now we're nationally known for that program and for, you know, internships and our alumni network. I mean, that all of that has developed so nicely over the last few years. And I think that's really an important part of what we're doing. And I think back on the alumni network, I think my status as an alum has enabled some maybe closer connections, some bringing back of people to the institution. And then we've had a big pitch towards keeping our recent graduates engaged in a way that we never had. I think this whole BOLD program, Burgeons of the Last Decade, has been great. Young alumni really seem to enjoy it. The networking opportunities, the sense of connection to the college, I think is far greater than what we used to have. I think people are proud, you know, their Gettysburg connection maybe in a way that they didn't used to be. And so that I find to be just really gratifying. Yeah.
And anything that you
I'm
would...
I'm happy about our campaign, too, by the way. I should mention that. You know, we've raised over $150 million for Gettysburg College, and that's been a lot of hard work, and it's important work, obviously.
And just to note on that, we'll celebrate the conclusion of that campaign at homecoming weekend in September with an event in a tent, I understand.
That's what I understand, too. Yeah.
This tent that will be set up on the marching band practice field, okay, or also known as Memorial Field.
Yeah. I guess you'll lose that field for a few days. Huh?
For a few days, although yeah. I also understand there will be a performance by the band at that event.
Well, so, I hope so.
Well, yes, it's on my calendar, so
good.
I imagine we'll be there.
Good.
So, President Janet Morgan Riggs, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you both for the time this morning.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank College President Janet Morgan Riggs for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Be sure to join us next week. We'll interview the chair of the Presidential Search Committee, Charlie Scott. Have a great week.